सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। चैप्टर 2 वर्सेस 29-34। आश्चर्यवत् पश्यति कश्चिदेनम् आश्चर्यवत् पश्यति कश्चिदेनम् आश्चर्यवत् वदति ततैव चान्यः आश्चर्यवत् वदति ततैव चान्यः आश्चर्यवच्चैनमन्यशृणोति आश्चर्यवच्चैनमन्यशृणोति श्रुत्वाप्येनं वेदन चैव कश्चित् श्रुत्वाप्येनं वेदन चैव कश्चित् आश्चर्यवत् पश्यति कश्चिदेनम् आश्चर्यवत् वदति ततैव चान्यः आश्चर्यवच्चैनमन्यशृणोति श्रुत्वापेनं वेदन चैव कश्चित् देहि नित्यमवध्योऽयम् देहि नित्यमवध्योऽयम् देहे सर्वस्य भारत देहे सर्वस्य भारत तस्मात् सर्वाणि भूतानि तस्मात् सर्वाणि भूतानि न त्वं शोचितुमर्हसि न त्वं शोचितुमर्हसि देहि नित्यमवध्योऽयम् देहे सर्वस्य भारत तस्मात् सर्वाणि भूतानि न त्वं शोचितुमर्हसि स्वधर्ममपि चावेक्ष्य स्वधर्ममपि चावेक्ष्य न विकम्पितुमर्हसि विकम्पितुमर्हसि धर्म्यादियुद्धाश्रेयोऽन्यत् धर्मादियुद्धाश्रेयोऽन्यत् क्षत्रियस्य न विद्यते क्षत्रियस्य न विद्यते स्वधर्ममपि चावेक्ष्य न विकम्पितुमर्हसि धर्म्यादियुद्धाश्रेयोऽन्यत् क्षत्रियस्य न विद्यते यदृच्छया चोपपन्नम् यदृच्छया चोपपन्नम् स्वर्गद्वारमपावृतम् स्वर्गद्वारमपावृतम् सुखिन क्षत्रिया पार्थ सुखिन क्षत्रिया पार्थ लभन्ते युद्धमीदृशम् लभन्ते युद्धमीदृशम् यदृच्छया चोपपन्नम् स्वर्गद्वारमपावृतम् सुखिन क्षत्रिया पार्थ लभन्ते युद्धमीदृशम् अत चेत्त्वमिमं धर्म्यम् अत चेत्त्वमिमं धर्म्यम् सङ्ग्रामं न करिष्यसि करिष्यसि ततः स्वधर्मं कीर्तिं च ततः स्वधर्मं कीर्तिं च हित्वा पापमवाप्स्यसि हित्वा पापमवाप्स्यसि अत चेत्त्वमिमं धर्म्यं संग्रामं न करिष्यसि तदा स्वधर्मं कीर्तिं च हित्वा पापमवाप्स्यसि अकीर्तिं चापि भूतानि अकीर्तिं चापि भूतानि कथयिष्यन्ति ते व्ययाम् कथयिष्यन्ति ते व्ययाम् संभावितस्य चाकीर्तिम् संभावितस्य चाकीर्तिम् मरणादतिरिच्यते मरणादतिरिच्यते अकीर्तिं चापि भूतानि कथयिष्यन्ति ते व्ययाम् संभावितस्य चाकीर्तिम् मरणादतिरिच्यते From 26, Lord Krishna starts talking from the layman's point of view. So he says, even if you think this body is something that is going to die, it will have its birth again. Even if it is something that is going, that is something that has come into existence through birth, then it will again go back to death. So why worry about birth and death? Continue your actions. Now in 29 he said, one sees this as a wonder, also another speaks of this as a wonder, another hears of this as a wonder, and though having heard, none knows this at all. This, as I told you, means Atma, the real personality, the real self. He says, one sees this as a wonder. It could be looked at in two ways. One is, very rarely a person even thinks in terms of Atman, Brahman, etc. Forget about very rarely somebody realizing the self, somebody coming to know their original nature. Even to spend some time, invest in thinking in the direction of the self. A question might come, we are spending every week 1 hour, 15 minutes. So does it mean that we have set our direction towards self? Just because we are studying every week in itself doesn't mean we have set our direction towards self. We might have just taken up this book, Bhagavad Gita, for so many other reasons maybe. Because it is something that has been told, it's very good. It helps for better living, etc., etc. It's fine, but then ultimately, it is very, very rare to find a person who understands that I am not this vesture, the body. I am not the content, the mind and intellect. I am Atma, Brahma. And this is an opportunity for me, having been born in the human form, to realize the self. Very rarely a person even sets his direction. Of those who said, very rarely a person realizes the self. So even if he is set in that direction or realize the self, and if he starts speaking about the self, speaking on the self, so he says, firstly, very rarely a person thinks in terms of Brahman. That to find a person like that is a wonder. And a person who has set his direction towards Brahman, he finds everything a wonderment. Sun rising is a wonderment. Is wonderment, right? Nail growth, hair growth, everything is ascharya for him. He doesn't have to go to mighty Himalayas to be inspired. Every little thing that he sees in the manifestation is a miracle to him, is an wonderment to him. So he says, one sees this as a wonder, and another speaks of this as a wonder. The experience that he has got, when he communicates, he has to communicate it through words, and words are gross. they cannot communicate it. So he will be probably using too many superlatives. Like when you go to the 11th chapter, you will see unbelievable superlatives are used by Arjuna. So when you are talking about the highest experience, words fail. It's a wonderment thing for you. And then another hears of this as a wonder. Having heard, none knows this at all. Everybody may spend time talking about Brahman, Atman, etc. But in essence, hardly anybody knows what is Brahman. Means hardly anybody knows who they essentially are. So he says it continues to remain a wonder. There are other wonders. Today it is a wonder to you, but it can become something known to you tomorrow. But this continues to remain a wonder. You fail to understand what is your original self. So none knows this at all. So when he says none knows this at all, nobody can know Atman objectively. One can only know Atman subjectively. It is not an experience with an intellect. It is an experience beyond intellect. In that sense, it's not an experience. It's your original nature, original self. So it is not an object of comprehension. You cannot know it with your intellect. You have to become one with it. That sort of a knowing hardly anybody has. If at all anybody has, they might have studied about Atma from books, heard about Atma from many lectures. But knowing it as one's own self, it's almost impossible to find a person, says. So, ascharya, ascharya, ascharya. The deeper you go into your personality, everything you will start looking at as a miracle. You will not be looking for miracles anywhere. Everything is nothing but an expression of God for you. Today our mind conceives certain things as beautiful and certain things as ugly. So your mind likes certain things and there are adjectives used in those areas. Your mind dislikes certain things, different kind of adjectives used. But the moment you start seeing everything as an expression of divinity, what happens? Everything becomes beautiful. There is nothing ugly. So if you are seeing something beautiful and something ugly, that's the work of your mind. There is nothing beautiful, nothing ugly. You kind of become all accepting person. The moment you go towards Atma, Brahma, the realities of life, then you understand everything is nothing but reality in different name and form. Once you understand that, there is nothing more beautiful or less beautiful. Each one is unique. And that itself is a wonderful thing. You can't find two things same. You can find two things similar, but they're not same. Isn't that a wonderful? You understand? Even twins, they are similar, they're not same. The base of everything is same. The base is one, but the manifestation is different, unique. When you start seeing uniqueness, you will start appreciating the wonderment. So that's what he's talking about here. But today we see differences. We don't see unity in diversity. We see differences in everything. So when you are in wonderment, you become speechless. Isn't it? You can't speak. You just become speechless. So the more the knowledge goes in, the less you speak. You will start appreciating everything, but you will become speechless. So that's what he's saying here. One sees this as a wonder. So also another speaks of this as a wonder. In fact, they spend time in speaking about it. You know, subtle things, to get away from it is not easy. Gross things, you lose interest in it faster. Subtle things keep you into it, you know. Another thing is, gross things, when you hear from somebody else also, after a while it becomes little jarring. Whereas the subtle things you can go on hearing. It may take some time to tune into. Right? The film music vis-a-vis classical music. Film music, when it comes, it's a big hit. Everybody listens to the same song. After some time you get so bugged and you say, I don't want to listen to this song anymore. Right? By the time some new movie comes, you are saved. So, whereas in classical music, it takes time to tune in. But once you have tuned in, you can go on and on and on. So it's like that. They go on speaking about it. And there may be another person who is interested, and therefore he goes on hearing about it. Yet, there is hardly any communication. Because it's very, very subtle. Hardly known. Verse 30. Dehi nityam avadhyoyam. Dehi nityam avadhyoyam. Dehe sarvasya bharata. Dehe sarvasya bharata. Tasmat sarvani bhutani. Tasmat sarvani bhutani. Natvam shochitu marhasi. Natvam shochitu marhasi. Dehi nityam avadhyoyam. Dehe sarvasya bharata. Tasmat sarvani bhutani. Natvam shochitu marhasi. This Atma, which is an indweller, Dehi, indweller in the Deha, that which is inside the
body,
Deha. This indweller in the bodies of all, this indweller is one, but bodies is plural, many. The Supreme Self in each and every one of us is the same. But the bodies, external bodies, are different. This indweller in the bodies of all is ever indestructible. The indweller is indestructible. We've studied this before also. It is neither born nor going to die. It continues to exist, it never ceases to be. Subtle cannot be touched by the gross, all that we've studied. So he says, this is indestructible, man. It's the subtlest. O Bharata, therefore you should not grieve for any creature. What apparently is going through birth and death is only the physical body. The content goes from one body to another. This doesn't get destroyed. You don't see the manifestation because the medium is not there. The medium has gone from one frame to another. Therefore, you have not seen the reflection there. That's all. But nothing has happened to consciousness. In fact, you can't add to consciousness, you can't reduce to consciousness. It remains ever the same. So therefore, you should not grieve. From whichever angle you look, Lord Krishna is telling now that there is no loss. It looks as if the person has gone to unconsciousness and then he is coming to consciousness. But what we don't understand is, consciousness is there. He has lost the medium. When we say unconscious, it's not that consciousness has left him. Are you with me? The consciousness is very much there. But the medium has moved away. Therefore, the reflection is not there. You go to sleep, what happens? The subtle body has gone to unmanifestation. When it manifests, again you express that consciousness. The equipment is not there. Therefore, you were not able to express. You wanted to say something and you wanted to explain to them with the help of a chart. There is no board, there is no provision for showing the chart. So you cannot show it. That doesn't mean you do not know how to explain it. Similarly here, the medium is not there. Nothing happens. Now there is lost consciousness. So this indweller is only one. The consciousness in you, the consciousness in me, the consciousness in everyone is the same consciousness. That consciousness is expressed in the dream as a dreamer. The very same consciousness is expressed in the waking state as a waker. But consciousness is not the waker, consciousness is not the dreamer. Consciousness is the supporting factor in the waking and dream state, but it is beyond them. Therefore, there is nothing to grieve Arjuna. Jo bhi aap dekh rahe, it is all at the superficial level. If you come down to that depth, there is no loss. Like I have said before also, it's a question of perception. This perception, that deeper perception you have, each and every experience you will go through totally. When he says grieve not, he is not saying you become insensitive. Grieve not simply means you will be highly sensitive. In fact, a Vedantin, a person who has reached the self, will go through pleasure and pain deeply. But he will neither be excited nor be dejected. He will not have grief, that's all. But he will go through the pains of separation, whatever that might be. In fact, he is the one who goes through deeply. All the others are all surface emotions. And a person who goes through emotions deeply, you may not find so much of expression in such people. The other person who is only having surface emotions, is so much of expressions outside. Many times what happens is, in the world, people always go by expressions. You know, oh, you did not wish me today. You did not call me today. So they think you don't have love. You love yourself so much. You keep saying morning to you, good evening to you. You don't. So when the other person becomes you, not much of expressions will be there. I'm not saying you become incapable of expressing. And that is a negative state to be. Impotent state to be. You will have emotions, but you will not have any restricted expressions. Now the deeper the person, the lesser the expressions. One set of people do not have emotions. Other set of people only surface emotions. Very rarely a person who has deep emotions and hence not much expressions, but has capacity to express when it is required. In him, all his senses are perceiving totally. His emotions will be felt totally. He will feel it totally.
It comes out of some kind of greater sensitivity, but there is vairagya in it, is it? Is that how it
is? He has greater sensitivity, but he doesn't get affected by it. See, whatever he goes through, he is in it totally. Right? Even if he is tasting something, he will be tasting it totally. But he will not be affected by the taste. He will not get affected by the touch.
Isn't that like losing control? And
yes.
Like one, say emotions also, one lose control and grief and this and that. So here, it's all there, the sensitivity is there, but it's not losing
yes.
control.
As long as he is there, he experiences that and he keeps moving to the next experience. While he moves, he moves. He doesn't carry his previous experiences with him. In our problem is, in our case, in our case, we are carrying experiences. You understand? Every little experience is hugging on to our back. So by the time you come to 50th experience, you are like, my God, so tired because there's so much on your personality. You're not able to leave it there. So this is not there. He is in it totally. In our case, when we are there, we are not there. Only our body is there. Our mind has gone somewhere else. Like for example, when you are going through pleasure, your mind has gone to, oh my God, please make sure I don't lose this experience. Oh my God, please make sure that pain doesn't come to me. So it's gone somewhere else. When pain comes, you are not experiencing pain also totally. So what do? Oh my God, please make sure it's taken away. It's taken away. So neither pain nor pleasure we experience fully. And therefore, we can't climb beyond it. You can only climb beyond any experience once you have gone into it totally. When you go deeply into pleasure, pleasure vanishes. Along with it, pain also vanishes. I told you, this world is nothing but pairs of opposites. You cannot only find pleasurable things, only find painful things. It will be there together. Right? There will be dvandvas, pairs of opposites, everything. But if you want to get rid of one, you will have to get rid of both. This we don't understand. So the fact that he moves into every experience totally, he moves beyond pleasure and pain. Every experience he experiences fully and then keeps moving. Nothing he carries. He remains free. So this indweller, let your thoughts dwell within. Every time you read this dehi, dehi is different from deha. Deha means
body.
Dehi means the indweller. Right? So I am not the deha, I am the indweller. So I must keep my thoughts dwelling within. But generally what happens is our thoughts keep going externally from us to the world. Body is housed with five organs of perception. So the mind is going towards all the five perceptions. Seeing, smelling, hearing, touching, tasting. It's constantly going outwardly. If you evolve a little bit, then you will see that the perception will trigger the indweller in you. In the sense, I'll explain to you. Today you see something, you are lost in it. But a Vedantin, he sees it, he doesn't get lost in it. He understands this perception is possible for me to see because of Atma. I am that Atma. So every perception kindles Atma in him. In our case,
explain. Just explain this.
See, perception is the same that we go through and probably what a self-realized person goes through. Or a person who is better evolved goes through. But today our perceptions lead us to extrovert, extroversion, indulgence, and losing ourselves in thoughts, imaginations, losing ourselves into future. Whereas in his case, what I perceive is not the truth, but what makes me perceive is the truth.
Makes me perceive.
The very fact that he is so deep.
No, what I perceive is not the truth, but makes me perceive.
That's the truth. And that's me.
It's not the thinking.
It may start out with the thinking,
yes, yes.
But the idea of thinking is not to stop there. It's to create a bhava in you.
Yes. I'm trying to find the link between the perception and the earth. I'm trying to think how to get there. So I'm trying to ask an example. Because
anything, any perception. You can take any perception. You see a beautiful scene.
That. I understand that. But just now, it is outward.
Yes, you cannot change it just because you heard some lecture.
No, I understand that. But sometimes, an example, it becomes easier to connect and then to train your mind like that. I'm understanding the concept.
Having understood the concept, leave it aside.
Okay.
Continue your sadhana. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, all that.
Okay.
Hatha yoga, pranayama, jogi, according to your capacity, if you keep doing, you will find your understanding is put into practice. Over a period of time, you need not even put in effort, it becomes automatic.
But in the beginning, there has to be an effort to make it.
No, that's what I'm saying, that effort, let it be focused in doing your sadhana. So automatically when you perceive, you will, this thought will come.
Connection will.
Absolutely. So, indweller, when he says, he is trying to take you inside your vestiges. And when you go to the deepmost core, you have arrived. When we say you have arrived, not that you had gone somewhere else. You were there only always, but you were not aware of it. That's all. Now, we have moved away from center, therefore there is imbalance in our life. To bring about balance in our life, we need to get back to the center. That's all. If a person starts questioning, I am not able to balance my work life with my personal life, work life balance, I am not able to. He must ask himself, why did I start off with working? What was the reason for which I started off working? Why in this field? Why not in some other field? If you go on doing that, then the answer will slowly come to, for my sake, for my sake, for my sake. Then who is this fellow? Once you start focusing on that fellow, that is more important. You started off for a comfortable living for yourself, but now you are so busy that you are not able to come back and sleep in your house, you are sleeping in the office itself. It all started off for your sake, but it had ended up somewhere else. So therefore, to find work-life balance, you just have to ask this question, why am I doing these things? Even if I am trying to project myself as somebody else, why am I doing this? I am trying to impress that person, so that person will have some good opinion about me. Then who is this me? Get back to the center. Get back to the center. Get back to the center. The moment you get established in the center, everything becomes balanced. So for my sake, I am in work. For my sake, I am doing this for my sake. So therefore, what is important is my peace of mind. How can I do anything more or less? Just do it and get back. Getting back to the center resolves everything. We have moved far away from the center. Now in fact, not only we have moved far away from the center, other things have become center for us now. There is so much of confusion about center itself. Right? Each one is centered in something or the other. Somebody is centered in money, somebody is centered in name and fame, somebody is centered in the opposite sex. There is every other things have become centered. I have lost my center. Obviously there will be imbalance. So get back to the center, indweller, dwell within. So start off your day by dwelling in Atma. Because, like you must have been told when you were a small child, when you were doing your schooling, beta, first when you go to the exam, first the parents will tell you, teachers will tell you, beta, first read the question paper. 3 hours you are given, which may first 5 to 10 minutes go through the question paper. Then, what's the next step? Whichever questions you are confident, answer them. Why? Because starting the exam correctly matters. It is not just starting the exam that matters, but starting the exam on a positive note that matters. So every day start your day on a positive note. I'm not trying to be here superstitious. Even in cricket, if there is early wickets, then there is so much of tension. So they say it doesn't matter. Get your eyes in. Even if you are not scoring from the first ball, settle down, don't lose too many wickets. Start off on a positive note. Right? It is very important to start correctly. So every day morning, start by dwelling in the self. Even if it means at the thought level. Right? So therefore we say, early morning, as soon as you wake up, sit down and study the scriptures. Reflect on them. Spend some time. So you are starting from the center, not from the periphery. Otherwise what happens is, as soon as you get up, your servant comes and gives you coffee. You are starting off with your periphery. Start with the center. That's very, very important to start with a positive note. Just because you have begun positively doesn't mean everything will go positively. Of course you need to keep to it. But at least start positively. Kindle that awareness early morning through your studies, through your yoga, pranayama, through your prayers, and then get to work. When you get to work, you will be having that witnessing attitude to some extent. Do it as karma yoga. Then again, whenever you can, again get back to the center, dwell on it. The more you kindle your awareness, the more balance you will find. Even though you may go into a variety of activities, you will always come back. You will never lose yourself in them. A lot of people have gone far away from their centers. They cannot even imagine about their center. Because there are too many other centers for them now.
This Swamiji, I feel, is very relevant in education. Like, society, today's children, they get indulged a lot. And this is where I feel that our Gurukul system was very good from only one perspective. that first the substratum was very secure and very solid. Then you indulge as much as you want because your base is already made. Today the base is not made. Without the base there is indulgence. So the connections are not strong, or you don't have your balance or the sense of right and wrong.
As long as things go fine, the building stays. Foundation is weak. That's what you're saying.
Foundation is weak.
So, see, values and this knowledge is like the nourishment for the roots. Without nourishment for the roots, the plant cannot go through the life totally, right? You need to nourish yourself. I think I don't know whether in this class or some other class we said Brahmacharya Ashrama should be looked at as an ashrama of strengthening process. I think we said that here, right? Did we say that here? I don't know. But I have so many other classes, I don't remember. Brahmacharya Ashrama is conservation. Not allowing the energy to get dissipated into other things. But that's the time when you are learning, you are so curious also. Right? So many things. You've just come out from your mother's womb, from darkness. The child is so curious. It wants to feel everything. It wants to taste everything. It doesn't know what it should put in, what it should not put in. Just puts it in. Because of curiosity. Right? And then the body also grows. The glands also brings out certain curiosities. So there are so many curiosities. So that is the time there is so much of protection needed, not to restrict the freedom so that the child grows into a suppressed individual, but the protection is to make sure that the energies are directed in the right way, right areas. And therefore Brahmacharya is a discipline. It's a process of strengthening. And once a person's roots have been nourished and strengthened, and he or she will have desires, so they go into grihastha ashrama. But while you go into grihastha ashrama, you go through the grihastha ashrama consciously. Only a strengthened person can do that. A weak person, initially he may be conscious, within 5 minutes his consciousness is gone. But a strong person can be conscious throughout. You know, if a person's strength is quite deep, he will sail through. He will go through the grihastha ashrama, but rise above it and realize the self. So the point is, student life, the brahmacharya life, is not a life of restriction, but it's a life of discipline meant for strengthening the person. So that you become an asset and not a liability. You will have to first take care of yourself. Only then can you think of even taking care of anybody else. If you are so weak that you are not able to take care of yourself, what can you do to anybody else? Like they tell you when you fly, first help yourself with the oxygen mask at times of emergency. Then go to the other fellows, even your own child. Otherwise, halfway through as you are helping them, you will suffocate and die. So that strengthening process, a lot of us, what happens is we don't strengthen ourselves at that time. Mind goes into various directions. And that's the area, you know, that's the time. Like nowadays you have as much possible distractions you can think of with the advent of inventions. You do not know what to do. Right? See, there is a certain amount of information what everybody can deal with. Like a doctor, even though he has certain doubts about what is gone wrong with you, he may not tell you everything. He will not, rather. He will deal with you psychologically also. And then he will tell you nothing wrong with you, and he will get you out of that whatever was wrong with you. But nowadays, there is so much of exploration, you know, so much of knowledge everywhere. people get so much of information, they're not able to handle it. They collapse. So it has to be given in doses, and for a protected mind, and which needs to be channelized. Like even if the lady is pregnant, they say the first 3 months is very important. Isn't it? First 3 months. The beginning time. But the problem today is, since everybody has lost their center, they have no time to be there for their children. And later on, you say, my God, I gave car with a driver, the best mobile phone, this and that, but what's the use? The formative stages. Right? So that's when you can really put in the sanskaras. That's very important. So, it's all purely scientific. When in religion they say there is certain rituals during marriage, before conjugal relationship, pregnancy, every time the thought is to get to that center. Put it in the sanskar. That's the best investment you can do. And when a person is rooted, centered, he knows how to earn his millions, he knows how to be happy with his hundreds. There is nothing greater, there is no greater gift that you can give to your child. To be centered, to be landed all the time, to be grounded all the time, you know. Not lose himself. And once that is given, then the person can go here and there, no problem. Without that capacity, what you can do? It's of no use. So indweller, the word, this indweller in the bodies, plural, of all is ever indestructible. It continues the same, it's never been destroyed. Therefore, you should not grieve, O Arjuna, for any creature. Not only for Bhishma and Drona, for anybody else also. Keep doing what you have to do without any grief. So this Krishna saying, don't have to grieve, has to be understood correctly. Not that they will not go through emotions, but they will not be affected by it. Because if you misunderstand this, then you will not be interested in Bhagavad Gita. A lot of people have taken it like this, and a lot of people misunderstand this and they become insensitive. It is not that the Gita has made them insensitive, it is their misunderstanding of Gita that has made them insensitive, indifferent. Today a lot of people blame religion for the downfall of this country. It is not the religion. It is the misunderstanding of the religion. Like a lot of people ask, you know, Swamiji, what is the meaning of this ritual? What is the meaning of that ritual? There are so many rituals, I may know some, I may not know some. Similarly, they say, you know, I ask my parents, they say we should do this ritual, we shouldn't do that ritual. This is our tradition, etc. So we should do this ritual. So I ask them, children tell me, I ask them, what is the meaning of it? And they don't know. They don't know it and they force it on us. Should we do it? Should we not do it? It's not the question of should we do it? Should we not do it? Just because if they have given you the meaning, then you can do it. So why can't you put in that effort and find that meaning? And give them the meaning if they didn't know. Or if you find it quite meaningless, leave it. You can't find the entire traditional practices meaningless. You may find few traditional practices meaningless, not the entire system. So what happens is, a lot of us have peer pressure. A lot of us think we are thinkers. lot of us think we don't do mechanical things in the other areas. So we start criticizing this and that and don't put in efforts to understand religion correctly and practice it sincerely. Don't you think it is your responsibility also to understand it correctly? Even if your parents have not understood it. So what efforts are you putting in? If you put in that effort, then there is no question of misunderstanding religion. So what has happened is, people have misunderstood, or some so-called people misguide, knowingly or unknowingly, whatever it is. Therefore the downfall. If religion is practiced in the sincere sense of the term, then it cannot lead us into the war path. It will lead us to the unity path. Now, Lord Krishna from verse 31 continues to explain to Arjuna from the point of view of his duty. Swadharma mapicha veksha, swadharma mapicha veksha, navikampitu marhase, navikampitu marhase, dharmyadi yuddha shreyonyat, dharmyadi yuddha shreyonyat, kshatriyasya na vidyate, kshatriyasya na vidyate, swadharma mapicha veksha, navikampitu marhase, dharmyadi yuddha shreyonyat, kshatriyasya na vidyate. Further looking at your own duty, swadharma. Dharma means duty or nature, one's own nature. Swadharma means one's own nature, one's own duty. Rather, one's own duty is based on one's own nature. The swadharma of a kshatriya is different from the swadharma of a brahmana. Swadharma of a brahmana and kshatriya is different from the swadharma of a vaishya. Swadharma of all these three people is different from the swadharma of a shudra. Now when we say vaishya, shudra, brahmana, kshatriya, all these four castes, this needs to be understood correctly. We have dealt with it when we read the first chapter also a little bit, if you remember. These are all based on what?
On what they do, what is their duty.
It is all based on one's guna, nature, not by birth. You don't become a brahmana just because you are born to a brahmin father, especially in today's context. Just because you are born to a kshatriya doesn't mean you become a kshatriya.
But that's how it initially was. Mm-hmm. It was initially not chosen by birth. It was by a profession.
It was what? Initially?
So initially, you were not a Brahmin because you were born into a Brahmin family. It was the capability that you...
Absolutely. See, it's a science. Even today it is prevalent. Whether you accept or you don't accept. There are people who are intelligence oriented. There are people who are chivalry oriented, power oriented. There are people who are wealth oriented, economics oriented. Right? There are others who are service oriented. These four you will find in any society. The intelligence oriented were called as Brahmana in Sanskrit, in our culture. And the power oriented, chivalry oriented were called as Kshatriyas. The service oriented were called as Shudras. And the economics oriented, wealth oriented were called as Vaishya. Okay. Now, this we need to understand very clearly, that in the early days, early Indian society, they had understood the science very well, that it's not the physical body that makes a person brahmana or a vaishya or a kshatriya or a shudra, but it is the gunas. Right? So what did they do? They said the people who have these gunas are called as brahmanas or vaishyas or shudras or kshatriyas, etc. And to make it convenient, they said A Brahmana should marry a Brahmin girl. And they should have certain achara dharma. They should have certain way of living. When they practice those traditional things which are meant for intelligence-oriented people, they will be vibrating in that frequency. Then when there is a conjugal relationship between them, then the new soul that chooses to be born there is easy for that soul. Because if it is a Brahmana vibrating soul, that will go and be born there. If it's a Vaishya oriented soul, then it will go there. Because Vaishyas were also given certain traditions to live. Everybody had. In this, what is important is nobody was inferior, nobody was superior. That is very, very important. But it is convenient. Now it becomes a little complicated and confusing. Right? So what they did is, okay, you are a Brahmana, you follow this dharma. You be focused in it. Don't worry about what comes of it. You are a Kshatriya, don't worry about what comes of it. You are a Vaishya, don't worry about what comes of it. You keep on doing. So when everybody does what their nature is, firstly they will be doing it with total happiness. Because you are involved in what you love to do. What is your nature? What is in line with your nature? When you do something that is in line with your nature, there is so much of enthusiasm. Isn't it? There is so much of looking forwardness. If you really love your work, you would look forward for Monday mornings. If you hate it, is it? Get lost. I hope the Sunday is longer. You know, because you just hate it. Or you look forward for Friday evenings. So, are you in your Swadharma? That matters because that keeps you happy. And that happiness matters. You will do things happily and you will give happiness to everybody. So, the society divided based on the orientation, the gunas of the individual. And Arjuna falls in the category of Kshatriya, not because he was born to Pandu, even otherwise independently. For example, Radheya, Karna, he didn't know whose parents were. He was told he is the, you know, son of Sutaputra, but if you see his nature, as an out and out Kshatriya he was. You understand? So that nature, if it's put to use for the betterment of everybody, it helps them and it helps everybody. So it was a convenient and correct way of arranging things. But over a period of time, whoever became selfish and whatever confusions had happened, it would have been possible only by the, mostly by the head intelligence dominated people, I personally feel so. Because they must have created this kind of, you know, the differences, that this is inferior, that is superior, kind of a thought and all that, then the whole thing would have deteriorated, spiraled. But in today's context, whom you call as Brahmana may not be Brahmana at all. You understand? It's a fact. Whom you call as Shudra may be a Brahmana. And let me tell you one more thing. If you understand correctly a Brahmana, or for the matter anybody, they are meant to do their duties only to exhaust their vasanas so that they get back to Atma. If you see from that point of view, everybody is a Shudra. Because what are we supposed to do? We are supposed to keep on cleansing. That's why we keep saying in the class also, don't worry about how much dirt you have today. Keep focusing on removing them, cleansing them, cleansing them. You are only a scavenger. We are all scavengers. Others are also scavengers. They are unknowingly performing something else. But we have now decided, I have to cleanse my vasanas. So what are we doing? If you look at it from that point of view, it's a Shudrajam. Right? So there is nothing like superior or inferior here. So Krishna tells Arjuna, if I look at you from your nature angle, you are a Kshatriya and your duty is what?
Right.
To fight. And all the more, it's a righteous war. There is no reason for you to waver. Here is an opportunity given to you to keep your recall. See, when would a person, a singer will be happy when you allow him to sing? He's got an opportunity to sing. Right? A person wants to speak. If there is nobody to speak, what will he do? So he'll be happy if there are a few people asking him, please speak. A teacher will be happy when you ask questions, if he's a real teacher. Right? So Arjuna, this is a fantastic opportunity for you. If you look at it from the duty point of view, there is no reason for you to waver. For there is nothing better for a Kshatriya than a righteous war. What do you mean by righteous war? Where does he say righteous war?
Everything was taken away from them. So it is your duty to fight for what is yours.
If you read the Sanskrit here, dharmyat hi yuddhat, for a righteous sake, right? Righteous war. It's a righteous war, is better, higher. Dharma. What is dharma? Your duty is one interpretation. Your nature is one interpretation. What is the other one? Righteousness. Then you are following your dharma. When you follow your duty as per your nature objectively as a witness, you are not following your duty totally dharmically if you are involved in it. To the extent you are a witness, to that extent you are following dharma. Please remember this. You may be in the field of your nature, but you got involved in it, lost your objectivity. You are not following dharma. Likes and dislikes are taken over there. So righteous war not only means this local dharma, I call it, what you said now. From the worldly point of view, you are on the right side, Arjuna. Your property has been taken away by them. So you are on the right side. Come on, finish off it. Everybody, you know, if I am on the right, I become even more powerful. I just want to make sure I am on the right to vent out my violence, so that it is all justified. If you are told you are guillotining a goat for Mother Kali, you have no guilt. Are you with me? You just need some reason. So the reason is what? They have your property. They have taken it away. They made you suffer for 12 years. You are on the right side, Arjuna, fight. It's not that what he is saying. It may be so. Righteous war means you are in the war not as a warmonger, not as somebody who is trying to get back his property alone. But somebody who will fight it with total
dispassion.
Why not fight?
If you get to the point of being detached,
it's not the result, it's the very action. Result, we'll study about that, karmani eva adhikaraste and all that later on. You are never to do anything for result. Result may be Arjuna dies and the Pandavas win the battle. Maybe. So what? It's not the result. If it was the result, then I must be alive to enjoy the kingdom, no? It's not the result. Result can be anything. In fact, none of the Pandavas may survive. Maybe one of their sons may survive and he may become the next king and enjoy. That's all different matter. I am there in the war because that is my duty as a Kshatriya to go and fight. Not expecting the result. This war could have been averted, no doubt, if Duryodhana's sense prevailed. But once the war has been declared open, obviously there is a result for every action. We are not saying there is no result for an action. You may also have a particular result in mind, but keeping that result in mind, don't fight. Keep that result in the hands of totality and then fight. That is dispassionate fighting. That is dispassionate acting. See, when we come to do this class here, we also have a certain result. That is, everybody should understand Bhagavad Gita correctly and live their life as much as possible as per what Gita says, etc. But if I get so attached to it, then all the time I will be thinking, I don't know whether she is understanding, whether she is understanding, and I will get more agitated and I can't even stop, talk. You understand? It cannot happen that way. So, righteous war. Not just you are on the right side. You are on the right side of the war. One is to look at it from that angle, that I am on the right side of the war. That's nothing wrong if you look at it that way. Yes, it is so. But even if you happen to be on the wrong side, but as far as you are concerned, you are doing it objectively. For example, the judge has given a wrong sentence. Not necessary that he willingly did it or unknowingly, knowingly, whatever might be the case, but he had eventually given a wrong judgment, let us say, in the Supreme Court. And that is to hang the person. Hangman happens to be on the wrong side here. But is he on the wrong side?
No.
Not so. Is he being adharmic?
No.
That is where my point is. I am trying to tell you, yes, in this case, Arjuna, you happen to be.
There is a difference. I think there is a difference. In the example of the hangman, he is literally doing his job with no, but the consequence is not affecting him.
Dispassionately.
Yeah, but then because he's dispassionate because the outcome does not affect him. Whereas in this case,
the outcome does affect him.
It affects Arjun directly because he's a part of it.
So are you saying you cannot be dispassionate? In the case where, in fact, let me tell you something. When you have no, the consequences are not directly connected to you, the possibilities are you can be indifferent.
Yeah.
Number one. The consequences are connected to you, so the possibility is you can be involved. But if you are really strong, when the consequences are related to you, still you are dispassionate, that is strength. So Krishna is telling him that. That's the point, what I am trying to tell you now. So it is, yes, you should be on the right side. But what I am trying to tell you, in life, in circumstances, you may not necessarily be always on the side of Dharma only. In the context, it may be right, may be wrong. Are you with me? But do it objectively, dispassionately. That is Dharma, dharmic. So for a Kshatriya, there is nothing higher than a dharmic war, righteous war, conscious war. In fact, what Krishna is telling is, without losing the awareness of the self, you fight. You are not destroying anybody. You are only destroying what is capable of being destroyed. And in fact, you are not destroying. You will talk about it in the 11th chapter. You are only an instrument. Even if you are not there, they will be destroyed. Slowly he will explain everything. But the point I am trying to tell you here is, dharmyadi, there has to be, the very beginning note should not be, okay, I am on the right side, therefore I am fully authorized to finish them off. It's not that bhav. See, many times what happens, we just need a good reason to finish off people. Not that we have conquered our anger. We have been waiting for an occasion to tease that fellow.
It's the ego.
Absolutely. So you are not, you may be on the right side, but you are not fighting dharmic war. That's my point. In fact, this is what is happening in the world today, in every one of us.
But if you are on the right side and you don't fight, then what happens?
That is also wrong. Why are you not fighting? See, this, let me tell you, there are only two things we do. One is either we run after things or we run away from things. Both are out of ego. If you are conscious, you will consciously move into action. And you will be consciously moving away from action. What you should not do. Running away from action is different from consciously moving away from action. You find certain things not good for you, so you say no thanks. Just because you are a Vedantin doesn't mean you will not say no at all and say yes to everything. When you say no, it is said consciously. Later on you will not say, "Arre, I could have just had one sip." Why did I say no? No. When you said no, it was said consciously. When you said yes, you said it consciously. We are also saying yes and no, that it is all being said without awareness. So the point is, many of us have anger, revenge and all that. We are just waiting. And when we happen to be on the right side of the law, I will teach him a lesson. Because you are on the right side of the law. In fact, Krishna is not saying this. He is not saying simply let loose your power on somebody else, vengeance on somebody else now, because you happen to be on the right side. Your nature is, he will be happy if there is somebody challenging him on sword fight or, you know, all these things, because he is a Kshatriya. He will be happy doing that. A sportsman will be happy on the ground, on the field. Right? In fact, a lot of people, they get so bugged when they have to sit on the sidelines, because they just want to go and play. Supposing you tell somebody, you know, we'll give you this much money, but you will just be sitting on the sidelines. He'll say, "Hey, Baba, you please keep your money, let me play the match." That's what gives him the joy. He understands money is also important, but that's not everything for him. He wants to play. Right? A lot of people get fed up, you know, they're just being selected, but they don't get an opportunity to play. They probably made their living, but as far as they are concerned, they're living lifelessly. So you have got an opportunity now to exercise your talents. Do it dharmically. Firstly, you happen to be on the right side, which is good. But just because you are on the right side doesn't mean go all out. Dharmic war. Right? So this is a dharmic war. From that sense also it should be, for there is nothing better for a Kshatriya than a righteous war. Righteous war also because you had followed all the steps. There has to be so much of restraint and constraint before you exercise your power. That is why even after the Supreme Court sentences somebody for hanging, life, I mean, what do you call that? capital punishment. Even after that, in law itself we have given provisions. It can be appealed to the, you know, president, etc., etc. Why? There has to be extreme constraint in exercising your power. In fact, there should be hardly any opportunity for you to exercise it. You should not exercise it at all. A very cultured person will never raise his voice. Isn't it? So this is a righteous war from that point of view. They followed Sam, Dham, Ved. Now, Dhand. There was so much restraint, so much of, you know, methods followed, everything. Now, this war, you are very clear that we are not warmongers. And now just do it, is what Krishna is saying. So, Kshatriyas will be happy on the battlefield, and that too when it is a righteous war. Arjuna, what better can you ask for? So now Krishna is talking from the duty point of view. So Bhagavad Gita puts your focus on your Atma, puts your focus on your nature, puts your focus on your duty. The deepest focus is Atma focus. The next level is nature. Next level at the grass level is duty. So that's why in my classes I say there are actually speaking only two questions which are very important or significant. One question is, who am I? Other question is, what am I supposed to do now? Who am I? What am I supposed to do now? Who am I? I am Atma. Who am I? I am Kshatriya. I am Vaishya. I am Shudra. I am Brahmana. I am mother. I am father. So if you are father, mother, son, student, teacher, then the next question is, what am I supposed to do now? Remaining in the now. Keep moving so that there is no backlog that is being carried with you. Right? If you can really simplify your life to these two questions, you understood Gita. Oh, he has not done what he is supposed to do to me. So therefore, do you think I should do what I am supposed to do to him? Think like that. What he has not done, let him answer that. Let him be answerable for that. What you have not done, what you have done, you will be answerable to it. You will be answerable to your omissions, you will be answerable to your commissions. So don't forget these two questions. Who am I? What am I supposed to do now? If this is the context and I am supposed to do this, and it may be perceived as cruel action, I will have to do it. I can't do it if I am not strong. If I am weak, then I will try to run away from it. So this is what Lord Krishna has been saying. So now from 31 to 38 he will talk about little more in detail about duty and all that. Then he will say, with this I conclude Sankhya. Then he will move on to Buddhi Yoga or Karma Yoga. We will see all that next week. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.